Thursday. Hey, we get paid on Friday, yes or no? Or so, you know?
Not this Friday.
But next Friday.
No, you're not here!
You know, I go away for what? 3-4 days.
It was longer, but still.
Do you not want to come in late anymore? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I tried it yesterday and it blew up.
It doesn't
in our
work.
Face.
So you know what? Leave. Thank you.
Can I come in?
Okay, that you're not selling anybody on that. Hey, here comes Tom. Hey, Tom, there's certain things that people look forward to, which is the regular parts of the show that start the show. You're always 2 minutes late or something, and then you get started.
That's
and
right.
I turn around and dive into an imaginary pool.
But it's when the expected doesn't happen. That's the key to comedy.
Well, I know
the unexpected.
That, but, right. But the part of it is that you have to establish.
Right.
Good God.
When you explain a joke, you kill it.
Around the horn. Andrew, shouldn't we just go back to Tom being late? Yes?
I think that, yeah, we should.
Yes, Jacob, Tom being late.
Oh, yeah, it's far too
part
firm of a
thing.
Tradition.
All right, let's get started. All right, here we go.
Can I leave?
Okay. All right, here we go. Microsoft pledges $500 million to tackle the housing crisis in Seattle and on the east side as well. We just had that. Ursula just had that as well. I got three cuts right here. You got the president talking about this, Brad Smith on Seattle's Morning News. Did we play this cut already? I don't want to repeat. I don't want to chew my cabbage twice.
Again, these are all handmade by
you. Oh, handmade by you.
We're not setting up a development bank, but we will make our money available and ensure it moves quickly. $475 of the $500 million will flow into lending, some through established investment vehicles, some through new investment vehicles. It will go to low and middle income housing. And then $25 million will go to philanthropic grants to help address the homelessness problem, which is obviously the most daunting in terms of the individuals affected.
Okay, so he's talking about what it's going to take to solve the housing. Yeah, I can tell you what it takes to solve the housing crisis, build more houses.
The truth is it's going to take even more than the money that we're putting in. I think the first thing we have to do is help everybody understand the gravity and just sheer magnitude of the problem. Second, we are going to need more capital. We're in a really fortunate position as a company. We have the capital, and we are incredibly grateful for the support we've always had from this community. We want to make our success support the community as a whole.
Okay, what does Microsoft gain from all this?
We cannot have a healthy business unless we are in a healthy community. And we need to help bring this whole community to just a better sense of health. We need to have communities where the teachers who teach our kids, where the police officers and first responders who keep us safe can actually live with the rest of us. We need to have a community where people who work in businesses, including Microsoft, the people who drive our shuttles or work in our cafeterias, the people who have the lower paying jobs can afford to live as well.
Okay. Can I may take a cynical view?
No. We should celebrate this great, wonderful gift of $500 million to help us alleviate some of the housing crisis.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Is that you move on to the next topic then? You want to just take that rosy sort of unicorn view?
No. I think we should explain what they're doing and why they're doing it.
They just explained it. We're going to give $500 million.
Yes,
we're going to make capital available for developers to be able to borrow money.
Okay. We'll get to your cynical slant on this, but let's just establish first and foremost.
Not a slant.
What is it then?
It's going to be a small diatribe of basically the same themes I think hit on every 4 days.
I think diatribes by their very nature are not small, John, especially
right, go ahead.
From you.
I said small.
But the idea here is, first off, this is an acknowledgement on Microsoft's part. They are expanding their campus,
yes,
you know, by leaps and bounds. And I think they think that would might look bad if they were doing that and did not do anything with the political ramifications of the housing crisis.
Okay.
So they do acknowledge in the Seattle Times article that they are feeling some pressure from society to help alleviate some of the problems that they seem to indicate they might have had a hand in creating, which is one of those things that you kind of objected to, at least initially, that this tech boom we're having, you thought had nothing to do with the fact that we're having a housing crisis.
No. I'll give you that.
Oh, you will?
It was the second step, which was the tech boom causes homelessness. I said,
no,
that's nonsense.
Okay, but in effect, That is what they're acknowledging, that because of the tech boom, we are having a situation where people like teachers and firefighters and people that work in hospitals can't afford to live in the community. So they are addressing it as like a good citizen, as a fellow citizen.
Sure, right.
So they're doing that part. The second thing is, and again, this is something that people in real estate know, but most of us, general citizenry might not realize, is that it's really hard to, they call it workforce housing, which is like middle income housing. They're saying anybody who makes between like $62,000 and $124,000 as a family, that's where there's a real dearth of availability because it's not profitable. 62% of the new housing in this county has gone to people like you, John, rich people, because that's where the developers make a lot of money. So what they're going to try to do with this money is give it to developers to help them see more profit in creating that workforce housing middle income level. And so that's a positive. And then the third thing, and then I'll let you get on your soapbox. Right. But the third
You're
thing is
me yours.
This is a $500 million.
Wait, hold on a second. That is not fair.
It worked.
That
high
is not
five,
fair.
Jacob. High five.
You can get to your diatribe after the traffic.
No, and then it sucks all the air out of the room. And then Tom's third thing. How many more do you have?
This is the last one. The third thing is $500 million is only a drop in the bucket in terms of how much homelessness money we're going to need or affordable housing we're going to need. And because of that, they're calling on all other companies to do something similar and have government step up. So, I mean, it's a really complex and positive thing.
It's not complex.
Sully.
Hi, John.
Give him some music. There you go. Okay.
I yield my floor to my time.
The remaining 4 minutes before you go to a commercial break. Go ahead.
Okay, so we got a couple issues to deal with. One of them, southbound I-5, right as you get into the Mount Lake Terrace area. Crash over on the right shoulder has caused our Everett to Seattle drive to balloon back up to 50 minutes. By comparison, Everett to Bellevue, 40. The effects of the Alaskan Way Viaduct, we're still seeing a really slow drive from the middle of Boeing Field on into downtown. 32 minutes south center to Seattle. West Seattle Bridge still hasn't loosened up either, and we're losing a couple of minutes southbound 5 getting into Tacoma.
Okay. So wait a minute. So 32 minutes compared to what?
No. Well, 32 minutes, it should be less than that right now.
Yes. Like zero?
No, I'm not going to go into this. Come on. Give John his time.
That's all right. That's a good question.
Play my cherry pie if you're going to ask a question.
I will allow that.
He allows the question.
What is the normal amount of time?
If it's a 32-minute wait now,
it's right on its average for a day with the viaduct. So in action.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, that's what's weird is we've seen lighter than normal travel times than when the viaduct was open during this whole thing.
Even on Thursday, which was considered going to be the high point.
So we're trying to analyze exactly.
Do you know
why
how many businesses decided to tell their employers to telecommute?
We've been getting so many texts on that since our last little bit I did with Dave just before you guys came on. We're getting reports from some city of Seattle offices, like the city workers are working like 2 a.m. to 11 and some, 2 p.m. to 11 and some 4 to 2. I've gotten some smaller businesses, or like one that has 10,000 people, for instance, 200 have off-shifted this week.
Right.
So we're getting that's people that have bought or renting an apartment for a week and things like that.
Keep doing it.
Keep doing what you're doing. But those things are not sustainable long-term, so we'll see what happens once we get through it.
Got it. Okay. So, after Tom's 3 points on why it's such a wonderful thing, the question I asked you before we came in here was, is the $500 million, is that in some way a tax credit, or do they get to write that off? Or are they just including this into a pool of capital available to developers?
I don't know, John, because if they were somehow getting a tax break, maybe they could give us $1 billion or $5 billion.
So
it's gonna pinch them.
Let's realize that they have Microsoft has often been beaten up because they have a huge cash stores. Okay,
yes.
So they've got this money and they're going to need to hire Bob. And they say to Bob, by the way, the average income at Microsoft is anywhere between what and what? Do you know?
Nope.
$38,000 up to $167,000.
Wow, $38,000.
Yeah, that's your administrative assistant. Makes $38,000. Okay, they're going to hire Bob, and Bob's going to get paid $150,000. Now, Bob wants to make sure that his income is about 30% of his income is going to go towards housing.
Which
right now, it's out of whack, right? So it's at 45. So Microsoft needs to pay Bob more than the $100,000 in order for Bob to be able to comfortably live and not have to pay more than 30% towards housing. So what Microsoft has to do is go rather than 100, they now have to pay Bob $120,000. So what realize if you make $70,000 from the employer actually pays $88,000, not only in taxes, but benefits as well. So the cost of hiring Bob and covering the cost of his housing, which is ultimately what his wage will do, Microsoft will go end around that and say, I'll tell you what, we'll make the money that we would normally give to the employee to make the employee's salary high enough for the housing. Rather than that, we're going to go around it the other way, and we're going to increase the supply of houses, mm-hmm. which will help bring down the cost. So then, therefore, we do not have to offer Bob as much money in order for Bob to have housing. So it goes around in a nice little circle, and it looks like Microsoft is doing this to make the community healthier. Ultimately, it benefits Microsoft. They can then have houses that are built the same sort of way that Ford did back in 1911. Ford bought all the land near the factories when he set that up, the tractor factory. And he bought all the land, and then Henry Ford said, I don't want to be in the business of owning homes. So he set up a separate division, and they sold homes to the employees. So the employees worked right around the factory, and it benefited everybody. They didn't have to pay them more. They didn't have to try to come in on roads. People were able to get to work on time. They weren't tired or sick. They didn't call in, call out. So same thing. Microsoft takes $500 million, increases the amount of houses, which brings down the price of the homes, and then therefore they don't have to put it in the paycheck. That's all. And that's not ominous. That's not cynical. I'm just sort of saying it's a way around not having to pay the employee more.
Well, no, and they fully acknowledge that the workforce housing that they're talking about, that there is such a dearth of, it includes Microsoft employees,
yes,
which
right.
a lot of us don't think that.
Right.
But they're doing a lot more than that because it's not like a Ford, who I assume was creating housing for his employees.
For his employees.
This
right.
is for anybody in the arena
right.
to get. It's not just Microsoft housing.
Right.
So,
well, as long as they keep the government out of it, it'll work better.
Well, actually,
I saw it in Sammamish.
They say no.
I saw it in Sammamish. They said, we want to be able to build these houses. And then the city council said, well, of the 100 units, 10% of them have to be affordable. So then they have to pay the person who moves in there is paying below market rent. So then the developer would go, okay, so that means 90% will have to cover the cost of the entire thing. That means each unit, all 90%, will have to make X amount of dollars. So then the developer runs the numbers and says, there's no way I can charge enough for the other 90% to cover the loss of the 10%. So you know what? I'm going to pass and not build at all. So now there's no units built. None. So when the government comes in and says, hey, you have to build 10%, it has to be affordable. Most developers, if the numbers don't shift and work correctly for them, they build zero units. So now you can still continue to have a problem because there's less homes. Get the government out of it, get the zoning, loosen up the zoning, and just build, build, build. Let's look like Houston in 3 years.
So, yeah, no greenery, none whatsoever.
You know how cheap it is to get a house in Houston? You get a VCR at a house,
VCR.
About the same price.
Cheap.
Okay, so there are a lot of areas that we can go into.
No, we're
going to
move on.
Government. Okay,
we're moving on.
In terms of the government staying
ratings.
Out of it.
Let's talk about impeaching Trump.
Okay, and there's one last thing, though. They argue that because this is just a drop in the bucket, they want much more government involvement. They want to double the housing fund that's provided by the state, and they want all the other companies to jump in. So they are not saying government stay out. They say, government, you need to step up and do even more.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. Let's see. So, want to go to the three stalemates, the three ways for the shutdown? Take care of that? Okay, here we go.
Okay.
And this is from the Wall Street Journal. I like this guy.
It's Gerald Seib. Yeah,
he does a really good job busting it down. So he explains there's three different options in order for the government to open back up again. Here we go. Here's first one.
Republican senators might get nervous that they're being blamed for the government shutdown and whatever inconvenience that causes, and they break from the president and agree with Democrats in both the Senate and the House to pass some legislation to get the government reopened while continuing the debate over border funding.
Okay.
Perfect. That's the best one.
Secondly, there's the possibility that President Trump might, as he keeps suggesting, declare a national emergency so that
this is interesting. Watch what happens here.
He can use Pentagon funds to continue building the wall.
But if we don't make a deal, I would say it would be very surprising to me that I would not declare a national emergency and just fund it through the various mechanisms. And by the way, there's more than one mechanism. There's various mechanisms.
What would happen then is that Democrats undoubtedly would immediately challenge his right to do that in court. The president then might be able to say, well, we'll let the courts sort this out. Meanwhile, we'll reopen the government. The Democrats might think that's a good idea, too, because in that case, both sides could say to their supporters, they didn't give in, but the government gets reopened anyway.
There's the best one.
Yeah, if Trump would do that. That's another question. Would Trump actually say, oh, here's my exit strategy.
Yeah.
I can actually get out of this. Or is he saying, I think there's a part of Trump that loves the standoff.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, that's, and then there's a third one.
Third, it does seem to me there's a potential nightmare scenario for both sides.
This is bad. This would involve me.
In which TSA airport agents decide that they're going to walk off the job somehow. Sick out, just simply not show up for work, or quit their jobs because they're not being paid and they need to find some revenue to pay the bills that they're accumulating. If that happens and the air traffic system gets snarled up, people can't get to where they need to be in America's airports, that could create an outroar that compels both sides to come to the table and figure out some way out of the shutdown.
Yeah.
Okay. An
outroar.
I know. He messed up, and I guess they figured at that point, hey, keep going.
Yeah.
Gerald's on a roll.
But still, the thing is, they don't say how that would resolve itself. You know, he is pretty good. This is all a video, by the way.
Right.
And he just talks, you know, right to the camera. Yeah. It sounds pretty good.
I like two. I think that's an interesting sort of twist. If you look at a sort of an old Netflix House of Cards show, that send it to them and let them work on it.
Yeah.
And then that way it looks like, hey, I did everything I possibly could, and that's the Democrats forced me to go to court.
But what if, and it doesn't matter how the court decides it.
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Because both sides will say, hey,
there we go.
Court.
He's used to going to court constantly. Donald Trump, sue me.
Yeah.
Sue me or I'll sue you. He was always taking everybody to court. Laura's Home Loans. Ask Laura, 833-ASK-LAURA. That's 833-ASK-LAURA for Laura's Home Loans. Last name, by the way, is Keel. You recognize that name. Been around for a long time. The Pacific Northwest, giving you everything you need to know with all the great valuable information regarding mortgages and seconds and VAs and reverse mortgages. No one knows more than Laura. Laura Keel, ask for Laura, 833-ASK-LAURA. All right. Take care of the story we missed before, which has to be that Natty Light, which is for natural light, Budweiser, Anheuser-Budweiser, crappy beer, but cheap. if you are concerned that you're not hydrating enough and getting enough water, I highly recommend that you drink Natty Light. It gives you a combination.
Our new sponsor.
It is water-flavored beer or beer-flavored water.
Yes.
And they have decided that they want to do what they can to increase the number of people that are going to their website and following them on Twitter and on Instagram. So they're going to offer $10 million to help the $1.4 trillion student loan deficit.
And by the way, that $10 million is a lot of money. I don't want to.
It's over 10 years, Tom.
Laugh at, but yeah, it's over 10 years to help pay down student debt. The idea is it's going to be a contest, a video contest, where you go on as earnestly, I assume, or as humorously, or however you think will be most persuasive. You post a video where you also include, you know, the green tabbed cans of Natty and display Natural Light's spontaneous, fun and irreverent lifestyle. You do a video, and then they will give 70 people between either $10,000 or $40,000, depending on how well they score. Mm. They're giving out this kind of money. And then, if that's not enough, on Super Bowl Sunday, they will give 151 fans $351, which is the average monthly payment, 1 month payment for their loan repay.
Okay.
Anyway, they'll give out that again based on how clever you want these videos. The smart thing about this, so they're giving away money, but they're getting, first of all, they're getting publicity by even announcing this. They're calling it their college debt relief program, which makes it sound serious. And then secondly, they're going to have all sorts of great material to use for ad campaigns, I would think, with these videos being sent in. So good for Natty Light, I guess. But if you want to be cynical about what Microsoft just did.
Oh, this is totally. It's like create social media marketing for us.
Yeah, that's right.
And we'll give you $300 to do it.
$351, John.
A month. All right. Well, listen, it's a smart move on their part. Did you find anything? Do they have any fun ads? Do you ever see anything fun that they've done? Natural Light, acting naturally. Sometimes you need to remind a bro to keep it real. Act natural. Enjoy a cold Natty Light.
Somehow there was the ad that they put out promoting this one was a little too visual, but they have put out a little bit of marketing. Okay,
speaking about money and budgeting, there's a great piece in the New York Times. It says, deciding how to decide. Even the rich need advice on budgeting.
I defer to you, John, on this entire topic. This is interesting in that they say that what people, especially rich people, but this is some of these rules can apply to the rest of us, but especially rich people need to figure out how much money they spend. Yeah. And it's not just on, oh, yeah, I bought a boat or I didn't buy a boat or I bought a house, but also include everything that all the kind of common expenses you have, your house mortgage, you know, all these kinds of obvious expenses. But when you write it down, you end up realizing, they say, much like diets, you don't realize how much you spend. And you include things like taxes, everything that goes out. That's the most important thing, is establish, oh, and then you can see certain patterns and where you can cut back and all. But they say there are four things that a rich person has to decide what to do. You can, with your money, assuming you have money, do you want to spend it down? They say that's rarely the an option. But some people just want to, hey, it's my money. I don't have any heirs, or I don't care about my cares. Right. I'm just going to try to spend it down. Or try to keep it at the current level. So whatever you have right now, I don't need to make more. I just want to make sure that I don't lose that. Uh-huh. The third thing is preserve its buying power by having its value keep up with inflation, which means it needs to be, you know, improving by 3% each time. Or spend it and invest it to grow as much as possible. Like, let's say you have $10 million in the bank. Mm-hmm. I want it, you know, in 10 years, I want it to be 15 or, right, you know, 20 a million. What is your, and again, I don't want to get too personal,
been poor,
but what is your stance?
When I was poor, there was no budgeting. It was just said, oh, what do you know? I'm overdrawn on the bank again.
How does that happen? I have four more checks.
End of the month, you're like, oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I'm writing bad checks. So there was no need to budget. You just knew you were going to run out of money.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, what am I budgeting for? It wasn't until you then either had a family or started to think about the future that you then started to say, well, I want to pay myself first.
Yeah.
So I pay myself, so I put some money, and now I'm budgeting. So I want to continue to always have the same amount going into that pot every single month. So then you just address the spending side.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, what are we spending on? So Lace and I, about 7, 10 years ago, we said we want to be able to save X amount of dollars, and we want to get to X, like $5 million or whatever it was, in savings by the time I go to retire.
Wow. So you had, specific goals.
$5 million, dollars, we said. Okay, so you get to $5 million. And then we went to Sally, and she said, okay, in order to get to $5 million, you need to save X amount every single month. Can you do that? She says, at this rate, you can't. So now let's start getting rid of things. So we were members at the WAC, Washington Athletic Club, and we were members at the Pro Club. It was crazy. We were spending every month. So we said we got rid of both of those.
Yeah.
And then we were able to fund the savings thing. So then we just dutifully, every single month, the paycheck from Cairo flies right over the Curly household and goes right into savings. Wow. So I never see it. I never touch it. I got a raise this year. I have all I've done is increase the amount of money that I now put into savings. What are you, Sully? You're not even here. What are you reacting to my raise? I didn't say it was a lot of money. Just it was a raise.
I'm not here. Then how did you see me go?
Because I saw. No, I'm allowed to talk about my raise. So it's more insane.
It explains your $20 you got yesterday.
It's called trickle down economics. And by the way, the $20 was 2 days ago.
Oh, was it?
So that's it. We budget for the savings. That's all. Because we look at it like it. Eventually, at some point, we'll need to draw off that.
And the money that you save, is it money? Are you planning on leaving money for your kids? Is that what's important? Or in case something catastrophic happens and you're in a hospital or you need long-term care?
Oh, I have life
care,
insurance and that sort of stuff.
You
already
do. Okay, so if you get, you know, like some kind of bad disease and you're going to be alive for a long time, you've got long care covered?
Yeah, I got that taken
Okay,
care.
So then
I paid for the kids' college already.
Okay.
So I got $175,000 for both kids.
Okay,
and luckily their grades are so bad that I'm going to be able to take that money and put that into my retirement fund.
Okay, that's good. And then if you
I'm rich.
And let's say you just, and again, it's just an imaginary number. You have $5 million.
Yeah, not yet.
But if you have $5 million, what would you do with that $5 million in the less? Would you say, okay, now I'm going to really live it up, or are you
I want to leave
at least half of that for my kids?
No. They don't get anything. You put the $5 million in, you retire. So my dad retired at the age of 55. He lived to the age of 85.
Unbelievable.
And he had the money in savings, and he just, there it was in principal, and the interest that spun off of it, he lived off that. And he lived off that, and there was the principal. What happened was, he started digging in a little bit more, went into the principal, which then reduced the interest.
Yeah.
So when he left this world, he didn't have as much money, but he was never in trying to like leave us anything.
He wasn't.
I said to him, Dad, don't in any way, skimp so that you leave us something. We don't expect anything from you. So just ahead and live it up.
Yeah.
Thank God. If he lived another 5 years, he would have left us nothing. My brother said it was getting down the bottom of the barrel. No, it's the idea of, which is, as my grandfather used to say, it's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Yeah.
Right. Because people spend.
Yeah.
People spend and spend and spend at the end of the month.
Keep as in saving, not saving. Keep as in buying something and
right. Keeping.
I
you know, yeah. It makes $100,000. I don't care what you make.
Yeah.
It's what are you able to keep and then have that money work for you. All right. Sorry, Sully, to offend you that I got a raise this year. I didn't know that was going to be
I didn't know you got paid at all. I thought this was volunteer.
Yeah. Sitting there thinking, oh, this is fun music. And it goes, oh, crap, it's bumper music. We're back on the air. Thank you for that, Andrew. You can text us online Trading Academy text line, 98973. Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. I always say some of the best stuff we do is not on the air. It's during the commercial breaks. We have one ear listening to the commercials.
Yeah.
You love our sponsors. And the other is just Tom going off. All right.
Step four. Step five.
All right. Here we go. By the way, this listener just wrote in, please tell Tom to continue to be 30 seconds late for the show. It allows me to know when I need to start listening.
Oh.
So they don't care about me. They care when you roll in.
That's
there.
Good.
All right. NFL's got a problem. Of course, we know about this with head-to-head contact or head-to-knee contact and all sorts of problems when it comes to concussions. And then afterwards, the scourge of those concussions could lead to, what's the name of that disease? CTE. CTE. Yeah. And, of course, it was Kenny Stabler's wife who said, I am going to donate my husband's brain to further research to figure out what happens. And, of course, the horrible story of college. It was our cougar that killed himself.
Oh, yeah.
Have they determined whether or not? I know that.
Kalinsky.
Yeah, they've also, I believe his remains have also been turned over to science because of the depression where there are problems with the concussion and depression that comes with it. Now, another problem for the NFL is after these guys retire, they seem to be carrying a lot with them, Tom.
Yeah, the average lineman, and if you follow Seahawks football, we have some of the biggest linemen. The average lineman weight in the 2000s, they say, is 315 pounds. And there are people that are much heavier than that playing football. Why is that the case? Why has football evolved so they want bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger guys? It's because the passing game is now dominating. And so what you need is pass protection. What's the best way to have pass protection? Have a big old gate, basically, of 350 pounds staring at you that you have to go around or through or over. And so they encourage bigger and bigger linemen. And this problem is starts in high school. They say, hey, you need to bulk up. Because if you want a scholarship to college, you need to be bigger. And then in college, you need to get bigger than in college if you want to make it in the pros.
Yeah.
And you have a successful career. Let's imagine the best case scenario for these offensive linemen. They're multimillionaires. I mean, they can make a lot of money over a 10-year career.
Right.
But they say what happens is, afterwards, after you've left the coaching staff, the people that feed you and they keep track of things, how do you then deal with your 350 pounds? Well, most of them don't work out like mm-hmm. they should. If they continue to work as hard as they did as football players, they could probably handle that weight. But since they can't, it gets worse and worse. And then they are prone to all sorts of things like hypertension and diabetes and heart conditions, all these kinds of things that are really, as they call it, the NFL's obesity scourge. Mm. And you'd say out of every, there are 11 players on each side of the ball. Well, half of them are linemen and they are unhealthy because they're effective.
I saw Sean Alexander a couple months ago and he came to town. You should see how small he is now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, he was never that tall.
Yeah.
But he used to have to work out a lot and stuff. So he was, you know, big size, good size guy. Yeah, he looks like a regular guy now. And then I offer us into Bam Bam Cam Chancellor.
Yeah.
He's also stopped working out.
Yeah.
He's still a real force.
Yeah.
But physically, he's not as intimidating as he was before. So the transition into, you know, everyday normal life, where you're not hitting the weight room or hitting the chow line.